Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Angelic Death by Renee Jaeger and Michael Anderle, narrated by Emily Beresford. Chapter 1.
The souls of the dead fly through the air. Through the air fly the souls of the dead.
Why do they fly? The girl asks her mother.
Her mother's face is solemn. She has told this tale before. She is as still as a statue, but for the movement of her lips.
The souls of the dead are of those who died in cowardice. Fly through the air. Fly through the air.
She pauses and looks out over the icy plain. They will come back to fight. A ghost in the hall. A ghost in the corridor. A ghost in the tower. A ghost in our ice-cold beds. The girl does not sleep alone the next night. She sleeps, curled against her mother, and dreams not of sweet things. A Story of the Slaw. For a very long time, Rooksmont Estate had been nothing but a mysterious castle in the countryside, from which came stories to share with children before bedtime. Stories about big black dogs with red eyes, and an elusive witch who dwelled within the stone walls. Some of it was true. Wolves aplenty roamed the grounds, but their eyes were not red, and they were as friendly as anyone else who lived there. This meant they were friendly if they didn't find someone a threat, and were quite the opposite if they did. What wasn't true was that a witch lived there. Miss Caroline Bain was nothing like a witch, though the part about her being elusive was very true. I wasn't a witch either. Her power was within me, so we might as well have been one and the same. I had been called a witch by other supernatural creatures. Since I'd encountered goblins, druids, and fairies so far, I wondered how long it would be until I met a witch. After a long night of much-needed rest, I rose from the enormous four-poster bed in my room and mused aloud. I'm okay with not meeting a witch for a while longer. Not meeting any supernatural or mythical creature who wished me ill will was fine with me. A shifting sound from the floor on the other side of the bed drew my attention to a rug before the hearth, where the fire had long since died. The creature on the rug lifted his head, and the wolf's tail began to wag. "Good morning," I said to him, grinning. I had yet to learn the wolf's name, or give him one myself. It didn't seem right to name him, since he wasn't mine. The wolf roamed where he pleased, and it seemed to please him to come to my aid when I needed him the most. I tilted my head and observed the large, shaggy black creature. "You've fought alongside the Morrigan before." Referring to myself as the goddess of war still felt weird, even after taking 2/3 of her power from other people. I shoved the feeling away as I dressed and began to make my way down to the main floor of the castle. Exploring my new home had taken what had felt like an eternity. There were some rooms I had yet to see. At least the main ones got cleaned out, I thought. Miss Bain had been more than happy to keep Rooksmont shrouded under mystery and fog. I wanted the opposite. I wanted people to know about my new home and come to me if they sought wisdom. Having the way of seers was taking some getting used to. As I descended the stairs, my eye caught Miss Bain's image in a painted portrait that hung on the wall. I didn't know when she'd had it done, but I liked it and wanted it kept here. The woman peering at me from the frame looked formidable and mysterious, her gaze piercing yet aloof. Having the way of kings gave me a different disposition. "We'll have to take it down," I said to myself with a sigh. Someone heard me and responded,
"A nice portrait, to be sure, but they'll wonder why she's there."
I turned to find a stooped old man with a white beard streaked with red standing at the bottom of the stairs. Shug grinned up at me. The old druid was my mentor, having left Miss Bain to serve the next woman with the way of seers. I might have been the Morrigan, but I had an inkling Shug knew far more than I did, and would for a long time. I grinned back at him. "We'll put her in another room. I don't want her becoming prey to dust and moths in the attic." Shug frowned.
"We have an attic?"
I shrugged and stepped down the last few stairs. "I don't know what the hell we have here. You know better than I do. Shug's eyes twinkled, and he wagged a finger at me.
I know, but I won't tell.
I shook my head and laughed, trying to shake off the uneasy feeling that often settled on me after the druid made such vague statements. During his finger-wagging, his sleeve slipped up his arm, revealing one of the many whorl-shaped blue tattoos that sometimes glowed on his skin. Shug moved to the side. At first, I thought he was giving me more room. Then I realized the wolf had followed me down and was on my heels. I scratched his ears. "He's ready for breakfast," I told Shug, but the druid had disappeared while my back was turned. I walked down the hall and into the room where I knew the person I was looking for would be. When I entered, I found a woman of average height with graying red hair standing behind an enormous oak desk. The woman, who was in her early 40s, looked up and smiled. She bobbed her head at me.
"Good morning, Miss Bain. I was just beginning to look through the tasks for the day."
I nodded at her.
"Good morning, Natalie. Has the coffee been made yet?"
In answer, Ms. Natalie Kimber, a new hire recommended by my employer, Reginald Townsend, handed me a cup of coffee. I accepted it with a grateful smile. Natalie had only been working for me for a week, but she knew I liked my coffee in the morning. Although my closest friends in the castle knew me as Angelica Morgan, the staff and the woman who ran the trust from the office knew me as Miss Caroline Bain.
"There's no reason to let them think any differently," I thought.
Natalie gathered a stack of papers in her hands.
"You've received dozens of calls about tours in the castle since yesterday."
I nodded again, and after taking a sip of my coffee, I responded,
"I'm open to it after everything has been cleaned out."
The castle in the countryside would soon become a popular attraction, but not because someone thought they would get eaten by a wolf there. I glanced down at the wolf, who had made himself comfortable at Natalie's feet. His ears perked as he listened to our conversation. I grinned and looked at Natalie. Although she was not fearful of the large creature, she didn't seem quite comfortable either.
"Today I need help with the trust," I said to her. "Reginald has sent over a dozen emails since yesterday."
I sighed and sat down.
Natalie nodded. "I saw them. I've begun."
I smiled.
"You're a dream."
She was. Anyone Reginald had recommended to me was. Teg had been the first, but unlike Teg, Natalie didn't know I had goddess powers. Since moving into Rooksmont, I had begun bringing my work home, making the majority of it remote. Having Natalie as an assistant relieved the pressure on me. She could manage everything at the office while I worked here, I had decided, leaving me to focus more on Morgan's murder. This made me think of something else.
"Have you seen Douglas yet today?"
Natalie shook her head.
"If he's up, he's probably in your study."
I grinned and nodded. She was right. Douglas had been eager to go through my newly inherited library since first laying eyes on it. I set my empty coffee cup down.
"Thank you. We'll talk in a bit. I have a special guest coming today."
Natalie nodded.
"I'll go to the office in an hour. When will you need me here again?"
"Not for a while. You can run the office from here on out while I stay here." I left the room, and this time the wolf did not follow me. I made my way to the study, where sure enough, former best-selling author Douglas Velez was rifling through stacks of books he had taken down from shelves. I wove through the piles.
"Good morning, Velez. I see you've made yourself quite at home."
Douglas grunted, and his balding head appeared. He pushed his glasses up his nose.
"Good morning, Morgan."
He crossed his arms.
"I must say, even with the Way of Seers, Ms. Bain didn't have much of a system for organizing her books."
I laughed. "I think Shug was in charge of that." At this, Douglas flushed. My researcher, tech guru, and assistant for Morgan's murder had moved in a couple of days before and had yet to warm up to the druid, who appeared and disappeared whenever he pleased. Douglas's skills were so numerous by this point that I couldn't give him just one title. He was my friend and lived with me. After hours of trying to convince him, I reminded myself with a chuckle I hoped he wouldn't hear. The man had become a hermit, having hidden away after derailing his best-selling author streak. His popularity as Morgan's murder's frontman was increasing. It was a good thing he got out of his dingy flat, I thought. Here, Douglas Velez was surrounded by his favorite thing in the world. Books about mythology and history. Given how busy my schedule was, it helped that he could pick the ones that were important for me to read. Douglas set aside a pile of books.
I heard who's coming today. She hasn't left her cottage on the hill in decades, has she?
I nodded, my expression solemn. It's high time she left. I think she'll be better off here, where someone can look after her. The image of my ancient and worn-looking gran, who was really my great-great-aunt, and had been the Morrigan before me, flashed into my mind. Douglas's brows furrowed into the look of concern he often gave me.
It's high time you got yourself out of this castle and went somewhere else. You're always here.
I rolled my eyes. I'm not always here. I wouldn't want to become like you. I winked. Douglas, as he normally did, had a point, but it was a lot coming from someone who was a self-proclaimed hermit. I left Rooksmont to go to the hospital or for meals out, both of which were because of my friend and former colleague, Simon. My heart sank at the thought of him, and a sense of guilt prickled me. Simon knew I had moved again, but I had yet to tell him I had moved to a castle in the middle of nowhere, and that many of my visitors thought I was someone other than Angelica Morgan. "When are you going to tell him?" I often asked myself. "Tomorrow," I would respond. "Never!" I shoved the thoughts away as Douglas moved another stack of books to the side. Before either of us could say anything else, my phone dinged. Teg Singh, my bodyguard and personal trainer, had sent me a message. "They're here," I said aloud, glancing at Teg's words once more. "You shouldn't be texting and driving." I grinned as Teg answered.
"I could navigate the Rooksmont driveway with my eyes closed."
I had no doubt he could. It was part of Teg's job to move anywhere he needed to with stealth and ease, leaving me to feel protected despite my skills, thanks to being a goddess. "Careful there. Don't want you to become insubordinate." Now that Teg knew who I was and what kind of power I carried, teasing him didn't feel risky. Teg's response came alarmingly fast, as if he had anticipated my jab.
"It's what you get for sending your bodyguard on an errand. An utter breakdown in discipline. Who's going to watch after you?"
I remembered the iron knives in my boots and the wolf in the office down the hall. I was just fine on my own while Teg ran his errand. I imagined him shaking his head and grinning as he texted me. "Do you remember who is paying your salary?" I shot back. Once again, Teg's response came in record time.
"It was our dear friend Reggie, but now it might be a Ms. Bain."
"Try Angelica Morgan. I hear she pays pretty well." I suppressed a laugh at his response.
"Who's that?"
I rolled my eyes and sent a gif of a baby blowing a raspberry before tossing my phone on a chair and exiting the study. Shug stood just outside the door, his eyes twinkling with excitement.
"I'm glad to meet her, lassie."
"I'm sure she'll be glad to meet you too," I replied. Gran was to be the final resident at Rooksmont, finishing my crew of friends and helpers. It would not feel complete until she was here and settled. Shug shuffled behind me, and as we approached the guarded front doors, the third member of our trio emerged from the office beside us. The wolf sniffed and licked Shug's hand before coming to stand beside me. "Good boy," I said with a grin. "Are you ready to meet your savior again?" As I said these words, I remembered the time he had been thrown into a tree and ended the power of Samuel McAlpine, a druid I had successfully put into prison. Gran, to my great relief, had used what power she had left to bring the wolf back to life. I stepped out into the courtyard of the castle, where another result of my success stood. The willow tree stood tall, its branches extending toward the stone wall that circled the estate. Rachel Kestrel was not a she anymore, but a trophy on my newly inherited land. Sometimes looking at the tree gave me chills. Another thing to get used to. If there was anything I had gotten used to in the past several months, it was that my life was subject to drastic change at any given moment. My attention was diverted away from the willow tree as a car pulled through the gate and up to the front of the castle. The sleek black car came to a stop, and the driver emerged. Teg wore his normal bodyguard attire, along with his turban. His pleasant brown eyes met mine. Then he went around to the other side of the car and opened the door. He offered his hand to the passenger. Watching Gran climb out of a car made my heart skip a beat. She had decided to leave her cottage to come live with me, which made me feel warm and glad. I approached her and took the old woman's weathered hand. Her skin was cold. "Welcome home." I gave her a soft smile. Gran looked feebler than I had ever seen her. "Her time is almost up," I thought. Dread curled in my stomach as a morbid thought entered my mind. If Gran's power was drained, it was almost time for me to move on to the next step. "I don't know if I am ready." Gran's eyes met mine, and her lips formed a weak smile.
"Angelica, my dear, I have missed you so."
She glanced at the wolf, who was still at my side.
"And you too, dear boy."
Chapter 2 10 Haunted Places in the English Countryside by Henry Stevens. Number 1. Castle Rooksmont. Anyone who dares to venture onto the grounds of Rooksmont Estate, which is located in an obscure spot of the English countryside, is in for an unpleasant experience. Those who have traversed there have met beasts of unusual size, with eyes red like fire and teeth as sharp as swords. The resident of the castle chooses not to reveal who she is, though some have seen her on the grounds. Anyone she sees, she has removed at once. This place is not open to visitors, like many others on this list are. An excerpt from a blog article about Castle Rooksmont. The wolf trotted up to Gran and nuzzled her before licking her hand. She leaned against me as she stroked the canine's soft fur. Shug was the next to greet her. The druid flashed her a wide smile and slipped into a deep, unnecessary bow. I glanced at Teg and fought the urge to roll my eyes. Shug took Gran's hand and pressed his lips to it.
"It is my greatest pleasure to welcome you."
His eyes twinkled.
"I see where the lassie gets her beauty."
This time I did roll my eyes. Gran snickered and looked at me.
"I've always said one should never trust a druid who flatters."
She looked at Shug.
"Or any druid, for that matter."
I laughed, but couldn't help feeling uneasy as I thought about her words. Shug didn't seem bothered by Gran's remark, and offered her his arm. Together, the druid and I led Gran into my new home, with Teg and the wolf behind us. Once inside the doors, Gran's eyes traveled over the front hall's features. I had no doubt she was feeling overwhelmed. All she had had for more than 50 years was a quaint cottage on a hill. At last, Gran's eyes fell on the person walking out of the study toward her. Douglas wore a flabbergasted expression.
Hello, Miss Genn. Morgan, Angelica, has told me much about you.
I half expected Douglas to slip into a bow similar to Shug's. To my relief, he did not. Instead, he fidgeted with a book he was holding. Gran grinned at Douglas and then at me.
"Ah, your esteemed researcher."
She looked at Douglas once more.
"You've helped my niece very much. Thank you."
Douglas could barely stutter a response.
"Well, it's been my pleasure."
Gran chuckled and spoke to me.
"It seems I do not need the way of kings to make people infatuated with me."
Douglas flushed crimson, and I laughed.
"Enough of that, Gran. It's just that Velez hasn't seen many real-life goddesses."
A low laugh sounded from the other side of Gran. Shug's eyes twinkled at me as if to say,
"Some of you have so much more to see."
Then he vanished. "I hate when he does that," I thought. Shug's sudden disappearances made me feel like my eyes were being tricked. I rubbed them before turning my attention to Gran.
"We've chosen a room for you, and the cook is preparing food right now. How about a rest? You've had quite the drive."
Gran waved a dismissive hand and tisked at me.
"Rest? Not right now, my dear. We have much to talk about."
I had my doubts.
Gran could hardly walk, even with my assistance. She looked frailer than she ever had before. It was bound to happen. She'd been alive for more than a century. I remembered the visit to her cottage in the countryside that had changed everything for me. During that visit, I had learned of her involvement in the First World War, making her more than 100 years old. I hadn't believed her then. Now, with the power she'd once had in my veins, I could no longer doubt her. Gran uttered a heavy sigh.
I'm sure you've noticed, but things are progressing quicker than I expected.
Gran's words caused a lump to form in my throat. My suspicions regarding her frailty were confirmed. The longer the Way of Kings was within me, the closer Gran got to the end of her life. My heart ached at the thought. I put on a smile despite this, and led her into the study, where a fire was roaring and tea things had been laid out. I grinned as I poured in gin, remembering the first time we'd had tea together. Gran chuckled as she accepted it. She began to drink while I prepared my second cup of coffee for the day. A moment later, the study door opened. Teg and Shug entered, followed by the wolf. I was glad Shug came in by the door instead of just appearing in the middle of the room as he often did. They settled on a bench against the wall. As the wolf came over to Gran, Teg spoke to Shug in a low voice.
How about some chess?
My bodyguard grinned at the druid.
Shug glowered and folded his arms across his chest.
I'll have none of that, lad. I'll play checkers or mahjong.
Teg chuckled.
You won't play chess because you can't win. Mahjong it is.
A smile parted my lips as I listened in on their conversation. Gran also seemed amused, but not for long. She set her teacup aside and got right to the point.
Dear Angelica, I am glad you asked me to come here.
She gave me a weak smile.
My deteriorating condition is a result of giving my power to you, as you well know. But it is also the result of the process being incomplete.
I frowned. What do you mean?
Gran sighed.
I cannot have peace in my bones until you are the full Morrigan, my dear. You are almost there. One more to go.
My hands tightened on the arms of my chair. I didn't know there was a time limit on the process, Gran. I'm sorry.
Gran waved a dismissive hand.
You had to find your way through things yourself, my dear.
She sipped her tea again.
Knowing about the time factor would not have helped you.
I blew out an irritated sigh. Time is rarely on my side.
Gran's brows rose.
Perhaps that is because you haven't allowed it to be.
I leaned forward. What do you mean?
Gran's eyes twinkled.
You have the Way of Seers now. It allows you to see time for what it is, and to alter it.
I didn't know what to make of her statement, so I uttered a nervous laugh. Whatever does that mean, Gran? The old woman remained serious.
It is in the old tales, my dear. Tales where the Morrigan tells soldiers at the river of their fates. She can see into the future. She is as much a prophetess as she is a goddess.
I drank my coffee. Seeing into the future would be pretty damn helpful to me right now.
Gran waved a hand.
All in good time.
She had had plenty of time to figure things out in her life. I wasn't as patient, and I didn't like to think about living over 100 years. I spoke again, my voice solemn.
You should rest, Gran.
That made her crankier.
Stop arguing with a dying old woman and let me say my piece. I'm not done yet.
The wolf sensed her increased grumpiness and nuzzled her. It made Gran smile as she continued.
The last Morrigan, the one with the Way of Conquerors, is not like Miss Bane or me. I think the third Morrigan sister is hardly ever like the other two. Far from withdrawing from the world as Caroline and I have done, the other Morrigan has been very active among humans. Although she'll never get the credit, there have been several world events involving a lot of people dying,
that were a direct result of her work.
My brows rose, and my heart began to pound. This third Morrigan didn't sound like she was very fun to deal with. So far in my work with the goddess's power, I had been trying to save lives, not pile up bodies wherever I could. Gran forged on.
The third Morrigan, who bears the name of Mirin Naman, wanders the world, throwing herself into one fight after another wherever she can find one.
Gran shrugged.
Mirin probably thinks every battle she engages in is just or necessary. But without the Way of Seers, her perspective is suspect. Especially since the Way of Conquerors, apart from the other gifts, tends to be all-consuming.
I remembered what Gran had told me before about the dangers of descending into internal darkness if the power of the Morrigan was unchecked. Gran sighed.
In the history, I learned the Morrigan, the keeper of the Way of Conquerors, was always the one who could never settle, never rest. In the end, the Way of Conquerors was what wore me down. I couldn't continue with three in me.
So you gave up your power to Caroline and Mirin, I added. Gran gave me a half-smile.
I told you I would always give it to women in our family. They are family. I've given my last gift to you, but we're far from finished.
I swallowed the lump that had formed in my throat. Gran continued.
The one with the Way of Conquerors is always the most resistant to giving up their power. You shouldn't expect her to be welcoming.
Great, I sighed. How am I going to find her in time if she doesn't want me to, and if she travels all over the world? Gran shrugged.
I don't expect it to be very difficult. You have the Way of Kings and the Way of Seers to help you. The resources that come with your gifts are important and necessary in finding the Way of Conquerors and obtaining it for yourself. Without the first two gifts, you can't receive the last.
I nodded. The order must be followed. My brows furrowed as I had another thought. Can't you help? Won't she listen to you if you ask her to meet me? Gran's expression became guarded and solemn.
Mirin has not listened to me for a long time, my dear.
She gave me a sad smile.
We parted ways many years ago. I think it was for the best. I kept the Way of Kings so I could begin this process with you.
She leaned forward and folded her weathered hands together.
I don't suspect Mirin will be hard to find.
She grinned, and her gaze became far off, as if she were considering a memory. Finally, her gaze returned to mine.
Just look for where the fighting is fierce, and bodies are dropping fast. She will be there.
The Tenth Morrigan. December 26th, 1916, France. The early morning sunlight illuminated the stained curtains. Marianne Genn sat up with a groan and passed a long moment in pained silence before she remembered what day it was and where she had awakened. Most people spent December 26th, the day after Christmas, in peace. They ate what food was left over and enjoyed what gifts they had received. Family would still be in the house, but preparing to leave. This Christmas had been different. With the war raging, the gifts desired were for the brothers and sons to come home alive. As Mary knew, many people would not have this wish granted. This December 26th was different for everyone in England and for many others around the world, but for her it was especially different. The sundering had been the day before, but it felt like an eternity had passed since two of the three Morrigan gifts within her had departed. She remembered every second of pain. She did not, however, remember how she'd ended up here. Mary sat up and rubbed her sore eyes. The room was flooded with pale yellow light. The floral curtains looked like they hadn't been washed in months. Dust and cobwebs gathered in corners. The bed she sat on was hard and creaked with the slightest movement.
The room was small enough to indicate it might be in a hotel or a boarding house. Mary knew both to be...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?